Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded change makers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In the previous episode, we listened in on the fact-based time warp conversation between Annie Younger, a.k.a. Annie Y, at age 25 in the year 1980, and Annie Older, a.k.a. Annie O, 35 or more years later. The continuing true story conversation is all about getting to the bottom of things using the power of inquiry. You're invited to keep on being a fly on the wall. Okay, Annie Younger, we just talked about capturing your NLEs, your near-life experiences, those happenings in your life when you were so engaged in the moment, you were totally oblivious to the passage of time and what was going on around you. Yeah, I've captured them on paper, Annie Older, the ones I could think of so far anyway. Now you're going to tell me how to make a narrative out of them, a near-life experience narrative, which you call an Enlin. Enlin, to rhyme with gremlin, right? Right, and I'm glad you didn't feel like you were compelled to find every single NLE residing in your memory. Over time, they're going to bubble up to the surface as you become increasingly aligned with your life purpose. And that's really the purpose of this exercise, isn't it, Annie O? To help people find and align with their life purpose. You said that these NLEs and the story they tell point in that direction. Correct, Annie Y. NLEs reveal what you value in life, and what you value is where you want to focus your attention, your time, and energy. That's where rewards and fulfillment reside. If you value something highly, you're motivated to manifest it in your life. So, Annie O, we already talked about two NLEs, the ice dancing as a kid in front of an imaginary crowd, and the map making as a university student. I don't see at all how those have shared values. First, tell me what other NLEs you've captured. Well, you know them, obviously. Playing school and being the summertime teacher of our bratty kid brothers, public speaking contests in elementary school, writing poetry in high school. Good, anyway. Next step is to list your NLEs in a chart with two columns. In the first column, write the brief description of the NLE, and in the second column, enter just a sentence or two to describe what you were feeling in connection with each NLE. For example, concerning the skating routine on the frozen pond, I remember feeling energized to perform absolutely perfect routines to my imaginary audience. You remember that feeling? Yeah, for sure. We'll carry on our conversation again after you've populated your chart. Don't try to rush it. Be mentally still. Recall being in each NLE and note what feeling or feelings you first became aware of. That's it. Don't try to analyze anything at this point or make it what you think the feeling should be. Just record honestly what you recall feeling most clearly in each experience. When you've completed that, then we'll consider your comment about not seeing how those NLEs have shared values. Okay? Sounds good, Annie O. I'm guessing this will take us into the narrative bit. It will, but I have to emphasize, don't think about the narrative at this point. Focus only on the feelings that you become aware of. You don't want to skew the observations by projecting any thoughts about what your observed feelings mean or ought to be. Got it. I have a question, though. I remember you saying earlier that the term you use, near-life experience, is a play on the term near-death experience. And when people have near-death experiences, their lives are often changed dramatically for the better. They've seen or otherwise experienced something that's given them a new perspective. I guess that's what this Enlin process is doing, right? It's a less dramatic, less extreme way to bring about the same sort of life-enhancing change. You said it very nicely, Annie Y. I'm off to get in touch with my feelings, Annie O. I'm so curious as to where this might take me. Flies on the wall out there in Radio Land. While Annie Y is off compiling her NLE list, as an aside, let's talk a little bit more about aha moments. Why? Because the feelings you experience in an NLE are akin to the sensations of an aha moment, and often ahas are birthed in NLEs, and they're inextricably linked to your values. Ahas are those sometimes little, sometimes big jolts of surprise, realization, and joy that come with a new discovery. You gotta love them. I had an aha one day in the moment of realizing that having ahas is one of the things I most enjoy in life. Experiencing them is a core value for me, right up there with the ubiquitous values like love and belonging. And like any core value, it's part of what makes me, me. This new understanding explains things, like why I can sometimes sit for hours stuck in a Sudoku puzzle, geekily anticipating finding and resolving an obstacle that will enable me to finish the game. A game-changing aha found in one of the 81 tiny squares on the grid never fails to give me a nice little jolt in the moment. My aha craving also explains my longtime attraction to books and movies with a redemption arc, which, as you probably know, means, broadly speaking, a storyline where a character with nasty or destructive traits overcomes challenges and barriers to atone for their faults and flaws. In the process, they transform from villain to hero. Redemption means the act of redeeming or atoning for mistakes, being delivered from faults. As a teenager, I was fascinated by this character transformation, wondering what the heck their aha was, their sudden realization that initiated their conversion. Whatever it was, I wanted it, because at the time, and for years after, I wasn't much liking being me and where I was in life. I kept on wishing and hoping for a life-changing aha. Eventually, unexpectedly, as you may have heard me speak about earlier in my time warp conversation with Annie Y., my wish came true. Sorta, in an even better way. It was a me-changing aha. To reiterate my earlier talk on this, the aha I happened during a very difficult time in my life decades ago when I was a mother of four kids between infancy and 8 years old. I was working full-time. I felt trapped in an unhealthy, unhappy marriage. We were teetering on the edge of bankruptcy. To my thinking, I was the quintessential victim. I deserved and was searching for a rescuer. Lying in bed one night back then, reading a book recommended to me by my therapist, Melody Beattie's Codependent No More, How to Stop Controlling Others and Start Caring for Yourself, I became outraged and flung the book across the bedroom, hitting the dresser. The author was saying the same damn thing my therapist had said. I needed to get off my pity pot, take responsibility for my life, and become my own rescuer. The therapist didn't use those exact words. I recall lying there on my bed in the dark, feeling utterly defeated. This isn't my effing fault. I've been doing everything in my power to keep things going. Why is it my responsibility for me to change? It's others and circumstances that need to change. Many minutes passed as I lay there unmoving. Then something began to stir in my mind. My scattered, shattered thoughts and feelings swirled, coalesced, took shape, and an aha happened. If I was to dramatize that moment in a movie, the full, brilliant moon would have suddenly broken through the cloud cover and illuminated me, sitting up in my bed, awestruck. In that moment of enlightenment, I realized I am a victim only if I allow myself to be, only if I give someone else or a life circumstance, the power to make me a victim. No one or nothing, I was startled to comprehend, can make me stay stuck in feeling upset or hurt or angry unless I give them the power to do that. Unless I choose, I say, to hold on to those feelings in response to circumstances. Wow, all these years later, I remember jumping out of bed, grabbing the tossed book and reading long into the night. It seemed like I was suddenly released from leg shackles, that I had just stepped out of a phone booth with my cape on. I felt like Ebenezer Scrooge in the classic redemption story, A Christmas Carol, on that newly bright and amazingly happy Christmas morning after Scrooge was visited by the three spirits the night before, when dancing about he said, "I don't deserve to be so happy, but I can't help it. I just can't help it." I haven't stopped reading since, and watching, and listening, open to and inviting ahas. I've learned that you can't chase after them, as I'll elaborate on another time, because you can't know what you're chasing. I wouldn't have known to search for a breakthrough on self-empowerment to rescue me from victimhood. To experience that gigantic aha, I believe I had to hit the proverbial rock bottom, admit defeat, wave the white flag, be vulnerable to change, prepared to let go of tightly held beliefs and thoughts about who I should be, the way things should be. Finally deciding to let go of what's not working opened up space in my psyche that night to let in an aha. But personal change, self-discovery, growth, and becoming real don't happen instantaneously like the aha that can initiate it. The aha, the spark of new awareness, needs to be prodded and fanned into a fire with the same persistence and patience needed to, say, get a wilderness campfire going after a downpour. You can get excited, hunched over the fire pit when you see a tiny flame happening in your little pile of foraged twigs, bark, and dead, fairly dry leaves, only for it to lapse into a smolder. You keep on trying over and over, and then eventually it takes for good. Been there, done that, both literally and figuratively. And this doing something over and over reminds me of another redemption movie, the classic 1993 comedy drama, Groundhog Day, in which the self-centered, arrogant weather reporter, Phil Connors, played by Bill Murray, finds himself trapped in a time loop, waking up on February 2nd over and over again. Each day resets as if it hadn't happened, and Phil's first aha is that with the resetting, there's no consequences to his actions. Initially, he selfishly takes advantage of it, spending the loops in self-indulgent, dangerous, and manipulative activities. Eventually, another aha happens, this being his realization that he's truly fallen in love and he wants to become a better person to win over his love. When he finally succeeds in living an unself-centered, perfectly executed day, he's freed from the loop. One of the many interpretations of the movie is that the time loop concept is a metaphor of life, which repeatedly offers us opportunities for self-discovery, redemption, and growth. These offers are what I've been calling ahas. For Phil Connors, his persistence and patience enabled him to ultimately enjoy the rewards of love. As I alluded to earlier, love is a core value that I believe pretty well everyone holds. The more sparks of awareness that are fanned into flames of self-understanding and self-love, the greater the spread of light and warmth. I'm noticing that as you identify and get rid of the personal crap that so often gets in the way, you become enabled to give and receive love more freely. Stepping back and looking at the bigger picture, you can see how this unencumbered love manifests in happier, healthy interpersonal relationships with a significant other, within the family, in the workplace, in the community, in the world. I'm not alone in loving my ahas, even the tiny ones in the form of my little Sudoku jolts. Scott Kim, designer of hundreds of puzzles for magazines and thousands for computer games, although Sudoku isn't one of them, said, "What I always want is to have several little aha moments where your brain is very happy." Me too. Mission accomplished, Annie O. Oh, sorry, you were talking. No worries, Annie Y. Welcome back. So, I finished the assignment. I made that list of my near-life experiences, NLEs as you call them, and beside each entry, I tried to summarize the feelings I was experiencing when each NLE was occurring. That was actually a pretty cool task. Took me down happy memory lanes. Good stuff, Annie Y. Now I'm going to ask you to do the observing I asked you to refrain from previously. If I recall, you were recalling the ice dancing, the map making, the school teaching, the public speaking, and the poetry writing as your NLEs. Did I get that right? Yeah, those were the ones I listed. Okay, so what kind of feeling words did you write down to describe those experiences? Energized, rewarded, connected, immersed, satisfied. All righty, Annie Y. Now, take a few moments to look again at all your NLEs while reliving those feelings, and tell me what the common thread in the various activities is that you're noticing. Give me a minute. Well, the one that jumps out is that they all involve creativity in some aspect or another. Good. What else? I'm thinking, I guess I'm offering up something to others in all of them. So, Annie Y., what is it about the offering up of something that you've created that causes those feelings you recalled from over the years? Let me think about that, Annie O. Let's see. Maybe it's because I'm offering up something I've created to either make someone feel good, like the ice dancing, or help them learn something new, as in all my other listed NLEs. Interesting. Interesting? Yeah, right, Annie O. You already figured all this out. Yes, but I'm enjoying revisiting it anyway. Why do you think offering up your creativity to potentially help someone else learn makes you feel so good? You got me there. You know what I'm thinking? I think it's because I myself love learning new stuff to grow on, and I want to share that. And giving away something that's meaningful to me, which could help someone else too, that just makes me feel good. I especially love creative writing and speaking. That's my NLIN, my near life experience narrative, isn't it? Bingo, Annie Y. That's what your NLEs are telling you. It can be summarized as my purpose and what gives meaning to my life through creative oral and written communication is to assist others to find their life purpose. Generally, everyone's NLIN involves creativity in some way or another because that's a human form of expression. But for someone else, it might be showing up as, say, a quilter creating a unique design, or a chef creating a new dish, or a pilot creating the perfect flight, or a firefighter creating a safe rescue, or a farmer creating a harvest, or a social worker creating a supportive experience. Everyone has something to offer in a uniquely creative way to somehow positively impact the lives of others, right? Align with your passion and you're perpetually energized to live your life purpose. I know this now. And this brings to mind a ditty by Les Brown that so resonated with me years ago. I can't be sure if you've already come across it where you are at the age of 25. Here it is. If you want a thing bad enough to go out and fight for it, to work day and night for it, to give up your time, your peace, and your sleep for it, if all that you dream and scheme is about it and life seems useless and worthless without it, if you gladly sweat for it and fret for it and plan for it and lose all your terror of the opposition for it, if you simply go after that thing that you want with all your capacity, strength, and sagacity, faith, hope, and confidence, and stern pertinacity, if neither cold, poverty, famine, nor gout, sickness, nor pain of body and brain can keep you away from the thing that you want, if dogged and grim you beseech and beset it with the help of God, you will get it. Anyway, you will want a thing bad enough to go out and fight for it, and you will get it when that going out and fighting is sustainably motivated and empowered due to alignment with your values and passion. Yes, I've come across Les Brown's writing, Annie O. I'm just sad it's going to take me another 30 years to figure all this out. I wish this time warp conversation was really happening so I could get aligned with my passion much sooner. Why is it going to take me so long to realize this? What's getting in my way? So anyway, you're wondering what's getting in your way of aligning with your passion sooner, say now at your age, edging towards 30 rather than later, like in another couple decades or so? Yeah, Annie O, I just wish I was going to be able to remember this time warp conversation when we part ways, but I know that won't happen. Because if I did remember, we wouldn't be having this conversation in the first place. That's confusing. But what is so clear to me now is how to create meaning in my life by following the trail of my values and passion that leads to fulfilling my purpose. Why can't I figure that out on my own now? What's blocking me? Annie, why first be patient? Remember that little saying you made up a while back? Happiness is not a treasure to be found, it's a masterpiece to be created. Well, masterpieces take time and commitment and passion, whether it's creating a painting, a literary piece, a musical score, an ice dance performance, a handcrafted piece of furniture, etc., etc. The masterpiece takes as long as it takes. But the thing is, the moment the master begins the work on their piece is the moment joy is born. Creating the masterpiece of happiness takes a long time, a lifetime actually. But the moment you set foot on the life purpose path, you begin to experience the joy that grows with each tiny step taken in the direction of your purpose. It's the journey, not the destination. It's the creating. Okay, I get it, Annie O. I can't expect instant enlightenment and suddenly become Dalai Lama happy. We talked at length about this already, aha experiences and all that stuff. But now that I know how to use near-life experiences to get onto the purpose path, as you call it, I'm anxious to know what's holding me back. What's going to hold me back for some time? Well, we already talked at length, too, about being a square peg in a round hole, remember? We talked about holding beach balls underwater, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, I remember, Annie-O. It was all about not repressing our authentic selves. Right. Which led us to talking about near-life experiences and you writing your Enlin. They're all connected, these points. What's crucial to know is that it's impossible to follow your life, your purpose path, if you're not traveling as your authentic self. So the question to ask yourself is, what is getting in my way of me becoming my authentic self? Make sense? It makes sense, Annie O. Putting my real self out there is scary, though. When I try to show up as the person others want me to be, at least if they still don't like who they see, it's not the real me that they're rejecting. So the real me still hasn't been rejected. But if I show up as my authentic self and people don't like the real me, what am I left with? Being authentic is a vulnerable place to be. I'm afraid to go there. Oh, I don't think I have what it takes. Annie Y, you just now nicely summarized what it is that blocks the way forwards for so many, many people. Fear and a sense of lacking, not being enough. Let's take a closer look at that and how to get around those massive obstacles blocking our way. It bears repeating, Annie Y. Fear and sense of lacking are the things holding you back from manifesting your genuine, unique nature, from being your real, one-of-a-kind self. And until you become who you were born to be, you're not going to be truly happy and fulfilled. You're not going to find meaning in life and serve your life purpose. You got to get past the obstacles in your way. I really want to get to the obstacles part, Annie O. But first, can you clarify something for me? What exactly do you mean by find meaning in life and life purpose? How are they different, or are they the same? Good questions. This is how I've heard it explained, and it's the best way I can say it. We find meaning in life when we find our gift. The first part of the near-life experience exercise we did helps us to find our gift. It's wrapped in our values, in what it is that makes our hearts sing and what moves us into the zone. You'll find out when you age into me that your gift is animated metaphorical storytelling, written and oral, kind of like fables. That's where I find meaning. Our purpose is to share our gift, use it, give it away. A ship isn't built to forever sit in a safe harbor. Right now in my life, I'm finding ways through coaching and speaking and writing to share this gift. Not everybody's going to appreciate it. Probably a lot of people aren't, actually. But that's one of the biggest obstacles we have to get past, fear of rejection, of other people's opinions. Ooh, ouch, Annie-O. As you know, that's a tough one for me. I equate rejection to being a failure. It's not a nice feeling. No, I get that, Annie-Y, but our greatest learning experiences usually involve pain to some degree or another. Unfortunately, our default is to fear pain, something that should be avoided at all cost. Unhappily, the cost of fear is not living our life to the fullest. And pretty well everything we want in life lies just on the other side of our fear, said George Adair. So we have to move through our painful fears to get to the other side, not avoid them. Fear of rejection is only one, and it's tied up with lack of self-esteem. Lack of self-esteem can also make us people-pleasers and cause us to act passive-aggressively. Know anybody like that, anyway? There's fear of failure and even fear of success, believe it or not. Sometimes we're afraid of success because it can change our life, and change is often scary. Perfectionism, our fear of being imperfect, is a huge obstacle because we feel we can't put ourselves out there until we have it exactly right. That one's going to keep you stuck for quite a while. I'm not saying we ignore our current limitations. It's not that. You're going to learn a very painful lesson around that one, too. I'll explain more about that later. It means putting ourselves out there to the extent of our current capabilities. Going back to the ship in the harbor analogy, when we're still a small boat, we don't take on the monster waves of the open ocean. The more shipshape we become, the further from harbor we can venture. And then there's the whole thing of lack of self-confidence. Whoa, my head's spinning with all these fears and lacks, but how do we get through them? How, for example, do I not let other people's opinions bother me? Anyway, your questions are a good segue into the next part of the near-life experiences exercise, getting rid of the gremlins, the things that hold us back. But we have to park that until we can carry on our conversation later. Our time's up. So keep on wondering until next time. Flies on the Wall, I invite you to continue to listen in on the self-discovery conversation between Annie Younger and Annie Older by tuning in to the next episode of Better Me, Better World. I'll be back same time next week, same place, here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.